We chanted the Heart Sutra, the Foundation Sutra, I think, for our lineage, and then also the root verse of the Six Betweens. In it's one of the verses out of the Tibetan Book of the Dead that I got out of what Robert Thurman had translated. And we chanted it today to reflect on our passing, potentially, as well as the passing of the imminent passing in some time in the near future of Nancy Newhall, Michael's sister. Part of dying is, what is it? And I don't know, you know, except to read about it and I guess then experience it somehow. But there are some guiding texts about it, and people have experienced closeness to death in one way or another, and maybe we do continually in our day and night. But I just thought that, you know, this root verse of the Six Betweens, the first one that's listed is the life between. So is that between life and life, or between life and death, or birth and life and death? Or anyway, it's a between. And then the second one is the dream between dawns. And the third one is the meditation between dawns. And the fourth one is the death point between dawns. And the fifth one is when reality between dawns. And the sixth one is when the existence between dawns. And I've read in some of the commentary that Kojim Trungpa has in another translation of the Tibetan Book of the Dead that actually these betweens are things that are common in our day. And there's the between of Oriyoki, when you get your bowl and you start to open it, and but to the time when you close it. There's the between of morning zazen, where the morning bell rings, we wake up, and it becomes a ritualized activity because we do it many, many times. And all of us, I think in our day, whether we go to work or just how we wake up or go to zazen or how we practice, there's a ritual to our day. And that's also what I wanted to talk about, was the ritual of zazen. And somehow, maybe it'll be a great leap connecting the two, the six betweens, with the ritual of zazen. Zhao Zhou talked of zazen, and he said, when you meet the true way without doubt, it is vast and open as space. When you reach the true way without doubt, it is vast and open as space. So zazen is the cornerstone, I think, of our practice. And I wanted to give a slightly different take on it that might help encourage us in doing it as embracing it and meeting it. Taizen Dan Leighton talks about Zazen as enactment, ritual. Each time we come to sit, we participate in a ritual. Each time we get ready for and go to the Zendo to perform Zazen, the ritual begins. So when does the ritual begin? Is it at the morning bell? Is it before the morning bell? Before you hear the morning bell, has the ritual begun? Or does it begin at the morning bell? And you fall into seeing your mind, how it is. With the morning bell, if you're doing the morning bell, it's yes! It's a joy to announce the day, the morning, the start. To those that are sleeping, the morning bell might be, yes, time to get up. It might be, oh, no. And so you're already get a whiff of how you're embracing your day. Hit that snooze button on the alarm clock. Hit that snooze button on that wake-up bell. And then the han begins to encourage us on. But ritual is really rich with it can also be very constraining. It can be almost debilitating because you don't get the ritual right. It's like, how does this thing go? I don't get it. And it's like, oh man, I'm worthless. I can't figure this thing out. And yet, so you're allowed to think what you think within that space. But really, when you come to the Zendo, or you come to the Dokusan room for tea, there's ritual involved, and there are many ways of looking at the ritual. There can be looking at it in the strictness of form. And for example, in many Zendos, you enter the Zendo on the left with your left foot. And only the abbot enters the Zendo through the middle of the doorway. Our Zendo door has the hinge on the left as you enter. So entering on the left is kind of hard. And so we enter through the middle, like the abbot does, which is more Jokoji style, where everybody's equal. And we enter the Zendo space here in the middle, because the curtains are divided in the middle. It's awkward to go to the left or to the right, and so we enter through the middle. And then we have our ritual of walking to our seat, finding our seat, and bowing and sitting down and getting ready. And the point that I want to make here is that, Zazen is considered a Buddha activity. And Kaizen Jokin, who is, I think, two generations after Dogen, a translation of what he wrote. Since he was Japanese, this has got to be a translation. Zazen is not concerned with teaching, practice, or realization, yet it contains these three aspects. Although teaching is established within Zen, it is not ordinary teaching. It is direct pointing, simply communicating the way, speaking with the whole body, with this whole body. Although we speak of practice, it is practice without any doing. That is to say, the body doesn't do anything. The mouth does not recite anything. The mind does not think of anything or think over anything. Though we may speak of realization, this is realization without realization, the gate of illumination, through which the wisdom of the realized ones opens up, produced by the method of practice of great ease. So Dogen talks about this too as a practice of the Buddhas. And so when we come and enact this ritual of Zazen, we are performing an act of the Buddhas. And so we slip into the Buddha mold by practicing Zazen. Without reciting, without thinking, with just paying attention to just this and accepting just this and accepting just this and accepting just this as it is. One breath after another. And I'm speaking to myself here, too, because I forget. I come to sit, and I said, oh, pretty interesting day. And start generating stuff, and then for a few moments during my sit, actually may just sit in this ease of the just sit and remember it. This body remembers it, and we enact it. There are a lot of we act out this ritual. We represent our full knowledge and presentation of our Zazen. Each period of Zazen, each moment in our Zazen is an enactment, a performance. We are performing this act without gain, and yet by the end of the day, by the end of the period, we can feel some difference in how we approach our life. So I'd like to encourage an appreciation of our Zazen in its ritual aspects. And it's without attachment to the ritual, but with acknowledgement of it and recognition of it and mindful attention to it. Whether the ritual is the ringing of the bell or grinding of the coffee beans before Zazen, because that's part of the morning ritual, pouring it in the filter or putting the tea in the sieve, pouring the hot water over it and letting it do its thing. It's all part of this ritual that if somebody interrupts me while I'm making tea, it's like, watch out. Maybe not. It's pretty easy making tea. But it's still the ritual of the tea, of sipping the tea. Sipping this fluid that has something in it that this body then filters out and absorbs to get the neurons going. It's just pretty amazing that we get to have that. And if we can enjoy that moment instead of being, and part of the ritual is the timing of the whole thing, so that if the timing works out where you can attend to the tea or the coffee and you can attend to drinking it instead of like, oh my God, I'm late, and then you're rushing off to, I got a meeting at 8 o'clock, I got to hustle out of here, and how to embrace the ritual, because every day it's a new one. So our Zazen practice doesn't take us very far, and yet it takes us everywhere. And our Zazen practice, we can't grasp it, we do it, and yet there's nothing to grasp. And it's very, very simple, so it should be, like, containable, and yet it's inconceivable. So these rituals are useful to help us remember, and to we enact and we remember. Yesterday, I went off to an ordination ceremony. And many people here have had an ordination of one sort or another, or attended ordination ceremonies. And each one is like a wedding in a way. You get to relive the ceremony, the vows, you get to hear the precepts again. So going to the ceremony for two new priests in the Russian River Zendo, it was just interesting to be present with all these other people there. Some of them people I know, a lot of them I didn't know. And to find new life in the ceremony. And after the ceremony and after the chanting of the precepts, the two ladies who were just ordained said in unison, and thank you very much. And everybody laughed. And the head teacher, Tony Pachel, said, you're welcome very much. And there was just air and light in this whole ceremony. And even though some of it seemed I'm familiar with it somewhat, but it was nice to hear the precepts again in a new way, and to embrace them in a new way, and to realize I got to do a better job of following these precepts that I vowed to take. And just because of wearing a robe doesn't mean a station of standing. It means, Angie calls it, a stepping down, and a stepping down, I think, is stepping down from ego, stepping down from my ego. And I have noticed this with others that have become priests, that there's a gentleness that they embrace with it. And it's almost like, oh, they remember they need to, their shrouded in this garment that has some other requirements, some maybe other duties, some other responsibilities that aren't always what one wants to do. You want to go do something else. I want to have some private time. I want to have some my own peace and quiet. I want to do what I want to do. But instead, there's the calling that happens. And there are other, I think, noble, I'll use the word station again, where the work is unending and inescapable and totally demanding, like motherhood, fatherhood, can be that way, where there's no stopping. Gotta always be there. So, enacting the Zazen ritual, the ritual of Zazen, frequently in our life, allows us to put our toe in the pool, the Buddha pool. Some suggest we sit Zazen as if our hair is a fire. And I was thinking about that, is that it's like, got to put out the fire? Or is it that your hair follicles are like a candle wick? Each hair follicle is like a candle wick, and each hair is like illuminating. And in a way, as our hair grows, it's like the fire of the DNA is working its way out of your head. So how to not feel terror of the fire of awakening, but to feel the deep commitment and deep attention to the practice of Zazen, of not just coming to put butt hours in, but to embrace it as if this is our last Zazen. That this is our only Zazen, that this is our only life, as this root verse talks about. to slave away on the pointless business of mundane life and then come to out empty. It is a tragic error. With mind distracted, never thinking death is coming, to slave away on the pointless business of mundane life and then to come out empty, it is a tragic error. So I'll open this up for questions and discussion now about Zazen or about the root verses of the six betweens. Or whatever anybody else would like to discuss. Judy?
My mother was not a religious person. She, I suppose, quite opposed to it in some ways. But she always used to say, make it a habit, and she meant by that that if you have a chore that you don't particularly enjoy, really, it's the same thing as making it a ritual. Making it a habit is the same thing as making it a ritual, the way I see ritual, so that the ritual or the habit carries you through it, helps you. I'm trying to think of an everyday example, I suppose, washing the dishes or something like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, the habit may, sounds like it's just unconscious, and it, maybe it is, you know. Where the ritual is you assume that it's special in some kind of way. And therefore you feel like you're doing something you should be doing, you know. I think just the common ground between making it a habit and just making it a ritual is that it carries you.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow. It carries you. Which is pleasant. So, I'm not into having my hair on fire, you know. That's not an appealing image to
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah.
I think being carried is a more appealing image to me. Being held, even comforted, you know, is an appealing image.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is all right, too,
mm-hmm.
for our practices.
Do you feel held in Zazen?
Yes. And in the service.
Mm-hmm.
And in many other things around here.
Thank you, Judy. Cliff?
How can you explain the snow going upward?
Out there?
Yeah, the heat is rising.
Who are you looking at?
There's all this debris, like seeds from something are lifting up. So instead of the snow falling, it's these wind-blown seeds rising.
Are you asking me?
No, I was asking Doug.
Oh, I was wondering.
You weren't looking at it. So. otherwise.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Unusual drift. Just alluding to Judy's comments earlier, I sort of had the feeling that what's worthwhile in Zazen and also in life is the newness or the freshness or the fact that you're actually, everything's different at every Zazen, every moment. And somehow it feels like it's developing, or maybe it's dissembling.
Mm-hmm. But it's new.
Yeah.
It's fresh.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah. Even deep in a period of Zazen where you're starting to feel uncomfortable, it's fresh.
So I could ask Judy how being held contrasts with
it's. I believe that one person's image is not necessarily good for another person. So, and the images that sustain us come spontaneously, internally.
Mm-hmm.
So. Maybe I'll feel that, you know, from one in one sitting. Maybe I'll feel held in another sitting. Just that's what came to me this morning. That's all.
Doug, maybe you could comment a little bit on the line between appreciating ritual and really sensing its value, and then attachment to ritual, because that sometimes it's a blurry line, and sometimes I felt that I have that sense of being held by ritual, and not only here but in other contexts,
mm-hmm.
like even the Peruvian Amazon, having the experience with plants,
mm-hmm.
Master plants, without the deeply holding space of the ritual, the experience wouldn't be healing for patients and people that come there for cure. So I know that the deep holding role of a ritual, but I also have a sense that sometimes people working in releasing their attachment to other things in life, they get really attached to religious or spiritual rituals, and with that comes sometimes a deadly seriousness about it, in a judgment about people that are not doing the ritual
mm-hmm.
perfectly. And so there come these attachments to ritualistic images or figures or ways to stand or to do this or that, that people get really graspy about that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you could comment about that fine line between ritual as a holder of the space and ritual as just another object of attachment.
One thing that comes to mind is when you're holding ritual as holding the space, there is no line. And yet when you're holding ritual as if this is the way it must be, you're walking a thin line that of there's right and left and right and wrong and good and bad, and the judgment happens, but when the ritual is holding, when the ritual is the full enactment of it, there cannot be any grasping, because then you're not fully enacting it. You're actually very limited in what the ritual is, very limited in what the ritual means, very limited in the ritual's enactment. You're not free to do it, and yet somehow paying close attention to the details of a ritual give new openings, because there are so many details to take care of, like in ceremonial tea or in like the altar exercise, like when do I bow, how do I approach the altar, how do I receive the incense, how do I offer the smoke incense, what am I thinking about when I'm doing all of this? Why me now? You know, just all this stuff. So, but to hold to a ritual, maybe there are times where it's important to hold to a ritual, like because of the meticulous nature of what you're embarking on, like a surgeon has a ritual of how he gets up in the morning before his surgeries are going to begin. And there's a ritual that begins as he's coming out of bed to prepare his mind for the space of the surgery room. And then he has to go through the ritualistic hand washing and re-washing twice or three times, however many times they do before they don the gloves to go in to do the surgery. There's a very intense ritual that lets you know that the next move you're making is you're on, or maybe you're not. And today's not the day to do that surgery. So there's sometimes those rituals help that, but hopefully we can catch our grasping nature of it, and that's where we rely on the precepts of like not chastising others, hopefully not blaming, praising self and blaming others. It's like we each have our own approach to these rituals, to honor it as best we can and as skillfully as we can. And part of using the word skillfully implies a whole range of unskillful ways of approaching it too. Like well, I'd like you to do it a little different way. And then, well, how is that, Doug? How do you want it done a little different way? Well, you know, and it could be, well, it's my way or the highway. You know, that could be one unskillful way. Or it could be, well, you know, it could be a way that might not appreciate the other person, or might not acknowledge the knowledge the other person has. And so there are all these. So part of this spaciousness and holding that we have, I think, helps us to, in very subtle ways, begin to see how we are affected and how we affect others, so that the grasping can be eliminated. Back to your question of grasping or not grasping, and still committing to the ritual.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In the way Judy and Gonzalo were both talking about ritual as a way of holding and comforting,
it seemed to me as though the ritual becomes a gift to one's self, a gift to others. And of course, the nature of a gift is we don't grasp at it, we give it away. And then I was thinking of the role of ritual within families, and how for our children we dye Easter eggs, or whatever it is from year to year that we bring forward from year to year and say, this is how we do it, this is how we do this little part of it, and we feel special about it. And I want to thank both of you for bringing that forward, that aspect of ritual. Thank you very much.
Interesting aspect of ritual and holding on so tightly that it's missed the point in a way. Right? Maybe seems like washing dishes. I was just hammered as a boy to wash dishes. And for the longest time in raising children, it seemed like many of the issues of working with people came down to dishes. If you've ever lived in a household of other people, which most of us probably have, not everybody does the dishes the same way. What? And so this became really apparent to me, that this is where I come from, you know, the passing on of my family, my father, my mother. This is how we do this. And it was practiced, and we, my sisters and I, did that, and it was part of what we did after eating and before. But I am, my partner is Latin. I come from Germanic, and this is explained to me. In Germanic countries, for the longest time, because of this foreboding winter, you had to prepare, or you wouldn't survive. So having things just this way, in a line, almost, you could say, was essential. What? You're not cleaning up the dishes? No, I'll wait till tomorrow. What? Oh my God, I'm raising my children? And, but, you know, south of the border, doesn't matter, there's food everywhere, it's not any big deal. Don't worry. So to let go was liberating. I still do the dishes very carefully. I love Oreoke. Eventually it becomes second nature, it's not mine. But it's not for everybody.
Not every style is for everybody either. I haven't noticed you have Oreoke with us.
I haven't.
You haven't? I think
you've done Oreoke with you. No, I haven't. You don't sit here, you sit up there.
That's right. See? We don't do it the right way. The line's very thin.
I'm looking forward to doing Oreoke with you.
Likewise.
Was thinking when you were talking about that and the thing about ritual. It's one of the things that makes me feel good about being Koblen's student was that he threw a lot of that out. So it was Zazen and Oreoke and the Heart Sutra, and I can't remember the fourth one, but there were these basic things, and the rest of it he didn't feel was, I guess, that critical. And so going to other places, you see it done differently, and some people chant this sutra, and I am a person who has to have things a certain way, and I have a ritual built into my life, and then when it doesn't get done, I just get, you know, what about that? When I came here for the first session in February, I was really kind of fumbling along, waiting for somebody to tell me, well, what about this and what about that? And I just kind of went along with it as it went through. And one time it's the Metta Sutta, and one time it's the Heart Sutra, and one time we're going to have Orioki for dinner, for the meal. Another time we're going to do it community style. So it's a constant change. And I really look forward to that, actually, because I get caught and wrapped up in how things ought to be based on my own perception. It's nice to have somebody come along and shake that from, light your hair on fire, whatever it is. But I appreciate the fact that Coben kept it simple. And I think that somewhere is reflected here. So, thank you.
Yeah, that simplicity is liberating in a lot of ways. And yet the ritual can be really important too. But you know, my initial practice was with Katagiri Roshi in Minneapolis, and so I learned that ritualized way of practice of zazen and service and orioki. Then I started sitting with somebody else who came from a different tradition. He didn't know how to ring the bells or chant. And so then you go through that for a while of like, and they just do it wrong, or they're too formalized, or they're not formal enough. Like, that's how we're criticized here. And I'm overdressed, you know, wearing all this. But I was in this priest ongoing training program for 3 years where you learn to wear your robes and learn what it is to be maybe a priest. There were 5 different teachers and they had 5 different ways of doing it. And it was just wonderful to see the teachers were always present when the other teacher was not. Whoever was leading the service, the other teachers were present. Or whoever was giving a talk, the other teachers were present. And these were all really outstanding people in Zen Buddhism. Darlene Kohn, who's passed away, Grace Shearson, who's abbess at Empty Nest Zendo, Lou Richmond, who's head priest at a sangha in Marin, Steve Stuckey, Myogen, who's abbot, I think he's the chief abbot of Zen Center and all the Green Gulch, Tassajara City Center, he's the overseeing, and then Angie as well. And they all respected each other on how they would perform the rituals. And it was just that the rituals are important. They're rich and bring sincerity to the rituals. And that's a term to use in Zazen too. Bring your full sincerity to your meditation practice. Ms. Joan?
Well, this, Doug, is a rich, deep topic, and it's triggered a lot of thoughts. She brought it up in my mind. I will, since we heard the bell, I will leave it with one thing that's come up, and that is that I had the great good fortune to travel around the world to see vastly different cultures enacting various forms of ritual. It has forced me to confront my own prejudice, as it were, of how other countries, how cultures deal with their rituals. It's asked me to look at where I'm coming from, you know, from the West,
mm-hmm.
my own personal religious background and so on. But I think that underneath it, irrespective of its expression, whether it be a Muslim or Islamic, what do they call our temple? Is it a temple? What do they call the
mosque?
The mosque.
Mosque, yeah.
I've been in the mosque, I've been in the synagogue, I've been in the Catholic Church, the Swiss Protestant churches, the French Catholic churches, the Hindu temple. I mean, I've been really quite fortunate, the American Protestant churches. But underneath it, I sense that the effort is to quell chaos, which is a tendency of the human condition. We confront chaos within ourselves.
Confusion is another.
Yeah, I mean, of one kind or another.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's in a family setting, we need to do the dishes. We have to take out the garbage. When I was in high school, one of my religious teachers asked, how many of you hear the following statement every day? Take out the garbage. And virtually all of us in that class heard that every day. So that's an effort to maintain order. So I think that at root in this ritual, whatever it might be, is an attempt to provide some sort of order around the life. And I think where we come into profoundly tragic conflict is my sense of order is not your sense of order. And we're witnessing this on the global stage, you know, every day now. You know. And history has shown us this is sort of the field of conflict, of great, you know, great consequence. You don't have to look too far to see this, you know, play out. So I see it, you know, I see it. We've touched upon it in family. We've touched upon it in religion. And I sense that all we simply want to do is try to find a way to manage the what seems to be a sort of sense that there's no order out there, but nature suggests that there is. You know, if we're careful to observe, there is a sort of order to the natural processes of the harvest, the planting, the nurturing, and so on. But the death seems to be this one thing out there that says, oh my God, you know, what's that? And that's a kind of chaos. Does that make sense? So I think that the ritual is a kind of discipline, and I think that discipline, if embraced correctly, is actually freedom. The bell sounds in the morning, we get up, we do our ritual, we sit, or whatever it is we might do. We go to work, there's a ritual at work,
mm-hmm.
there's a ritual around eating, preparation, eating, mm-hmm. clean. So we can't really escape it, really. Otherwise, what happens if we... Ritual is a higher intention. Habit, like the alcoholic has a ritual around his wine or his gin and tonic and, you know, the game, the beer at the game. There's ritual in addiction.
And all of that, yeah.
It's amazing. I think a heroin addict has a very elaborate ritual.
Mm-hmm.
around the needle and around the plate. I heard once that a heroin addict can live a long time with his hit. Remove him or her from his established schema. In other words, move him or her from LA to San Francisco. And he takes the same hit. And he's dead because the schema has changed around him. It's very interesting. That schema is a ritual. So I just thought I'd add some things like that. But I think it's about trying to find some way of ordering our daily life so we feel like we're in control. But I think with that is that discipline.
Just one quick thing there, because of the Germanic violin, replace that word with rhythm.
Rhythm?
A certain Germanic responsibility I have.
Yeah, thank you for that. The other thing, you know, ritual can help eliminate confusion in a way, but also the ritual can help illuminate the ride, make ornate the process that's underway, that gives it color and sound and warmth, and it's and textures that are unbelievable. And to approach ritual as a means of eliminating something is one approach, like eliminating chaos, but a ritual that enlivens the moment, and it helps to bring, for example, in a religious ceremony, you have an individual, you have the interpersonal, and you have the transpersonal, and a ritual will bring all of those together as a richness that is unique in that one instance. So may we embrace ritual and of all kinds.